Hello, my name is Peter Woodbury, and I'm with Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. Today we have Kevin Tedeschi. He's the CEO of our organization, Edgar Cayce's Association for Research and Enlightenment. He's the author of over 25 books. He's a dream expert known internationally, and so it's my privilege to interview him today. So Kevin, thank you for coming on the show today. I'm really eager to have a chat with you.
Thanks for having me.
Yep, and I remember when I came here, you were my first boss. You were almost my last boss, but.
You were first boss, yeah. I was in the magazine area and you worked with conferences.
Yes, I remember that. And I interviewed for tours and then I decided on field conferences and we've both.
Now you give field conferences.
Now I do, okay. I do. And then from then you've moved up to being the CEO.
It's a great opportunity and a great privilege.
Yeah. So there's so many questions I could ask you, and maybe I could start with what do you see the future for the ARE? When you think of ARE going out 5 years forward and the work of Edgar Cayce, how do you see it? I mean, it's become so mainstream in a way. It's kind of, it's hard now to figure out the particular niche of the organization and the New Age movement. How do you see that?
Well, there's lots of questions in there. I think one of the frequently stated lines from the readings that I remember is that this work would go first to the individuals, then to the groups, then the classes, and then the masses. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was no such thing as an internet when Edgar Cayce was giving mm-hmm. that concept. And I think that the internet and globalism are both very much a part of that. And just as one example, it used to be that when people from the Edgar Cayce Center in Japan wanted something, they'd have to make a phone call or send a letter, which was even longer, and then there would be weeks sometimes in responding. But now it's an email instantly and a response instantly, and they're mm-hmm. doing programs and they're doing a great job over there. So I think that Cayce's vision of going to the masses is exactly where we're at. In terms of our niche, the thing that has always impressed me about this work is that although there are many other works, and although many of those works talk about elements of what we talk about, I still haven't found an organization or a group that talks about such a wide gamut of things.
Yes, that's true.
Whether it's ancient mysteries or health or personal spirituality
yes.
or relationships or learning how to meditate. I mean, we have the full menu, the A to Z handbook, let's
yeah,
say.
Yeah, the 10,000 different subjects. Yeah.
So I still think that this work has a very big place to play in terms of the transformation of human consciousness and the ability for people to help transform their lives physically, mentally, and spiritually. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's like when you meet somebody and they're into Edgar Cayce, it's like, you know, which aspect, you know, which, you know, they might be into astrology or they might be into the Search for God materials. Like there's a big range. And then when we have the ancient mysteries, we get that whole group that's particularly focused on that. How about for you, when you think of all those subjects? I know you're a dream expert and you've done a lot of writing about personal spirituality. What resonates with you, or do you find that you grow? You've evolved in different directions.
Let me answer that in two ways. In terms mm-hmm. of different directions, I am still, after being involved now for 43 years, I am still surprised to. I'll be looking for something in the readings, and I come across something different that I hadn't seen before, or a new topic, and that mm-hmm. takes me off in a new direction. And that definitely happened maybe 7 or 8 years ago when I came across this statement that suggested in the readings there was the illusion of time, that time was an illusion. And although I'd been involved for 35 years at that point, I didn't ever remember seeing that. So mm-hmm. I started searching for that, and there are well over 100 readings that mention the illusion of time. Mm-hmm. So that took me off into a whole nother gamut. I've spoken on that topic. Mm-hmm. I've had letters from ARE members talking about their own experiences with time being an illusion. So one of the things about this material that really impresses me is that no matter how long you're involved, you still find new things. Mm-hmm. And I actually hear that statement from people in study groups mm-hmm. all the time. They're going through the Search for God book maybe for the fifth, sixth, seventh, 20th time, and they see new things.
Yeah, that's very true.
In terms of the core material that I always get back to, as you said, I think that the information on dreams has been extremely life-changing for me. Mm-hmm. And I would say that the Cayce information on Jesus's elder brother, because I think that insight has totally transformed my understanding of who Jesus was and mm-hmm. how each and every one of us can relate to him regardless of our religious background. So those two things for me.
Oh yeah, I'd say that the background, the Cayce's work with what he had to say about Jesus. You know, I remember I grew up Catholic, and so I felt a connection with Jesus up until about puberty. You know, and then I felt he became, you know, like the
too far apart.
Yeah, well, you know how you have a when you go to school, and you have an older brother that was the star athlete and the did really good grades, and then you show up and they're like, oh my God, your parents must be disappointed in you. You know, you're trying to fulfill that. But it was through Casey that like you're saying, I reconnected to this, you know, this, I don't know how to describe him, this multifaceted character, you know, with past lives and, you know, all this. It just, and it made him more accessible. You know, I remember that I realized that, you know, Jesus couldn't have fulfilled his mission in my life with my parents. You know, not that there was anything wrong with them, but, you know, knowing that he grew up with the Essenes and he had that whole prepared community for him, that also just helped me realize that the specialness of his mission and what he was able to accomplish.
And the universalness of it too, not just for, you know, a religious movement, but in terms of a real transformation of all of human consciousness. Mm-hmm. And that, I really resonated to that.
Yeah. Now, just shifting the topic a bit, like with the reincarnation material, have you gotten in touch with past lives that you've had, either with Edgar Casey, with Jesus, with this work, with dream study and interpretation, any that you would like to share?
Sure. Let me tell you one that kind of surprised me. When I first got involved in a study group, I was, you know, just not even 20, and everyone in my group was much older than I, but at the time they seemed older. They were like in their 30s and 40, and so I always felt like I was catching up. And so when we started, this was such a unique group in that every few months they did something very unusual in addition to the Search for God books. Like at Christmas time, we'd have a supper together where you could only bring what they had at the Last Supper, like olives and unleavened bread. It was really fun.
And wine.
And wine. And then a couple times a year, we would decide to dream on a question. And it was really that impetus. And I'm sure people have heard this story many times before, but it was that impetus that got me started on dream work. And the idea for the group at the time was to dream on the question, what do I need to work on spiritually? And first of all, there were like 14 people in the group, and I was nervous I'd come back next week and be the only one without a dream. And secondly, I didn't ever remember working with dreams or didn't know if I could interpret them if I had it. But we wrote out this question at the group, what do I need to work on spiritually? I went home, read it before going to bed, and I woke up and I remembered nothing. And then I realized, you know, you got six more nights and you better come up with a dream. So that next night I read it over and over and over because I was really worried. I'm not going to have a dream. And just to make doubly sure, I folded up my question. I tucked it in my shorts so that it would be with me all night. And this is the dream I had. I dreamed I was in Egypt, where I had not yet been in Egypt. Since being here, I've been on 6 airy tours to Egypt. I've had that incredible opportunity. But I was in Egypt and I was on an airy tour with about 50 other airy people. And just as I was walking out of the Great Pyramid, somebody in the group yelled real loud, by the way, Jesus taught Kevin some dance steps and Kevin wants to show them to you now. And I was kind of surprised. I didn't remember Jesus. I didn't know about dancing. But I thought maybe I can come up with something. And as all these people are sitting down to watch my activity or my performance, somebody I didn't really care for in ARE sat down in front of me, and I, excuse the language, I thought to myself.
It wasn't me, was it?
No, it wasn't. Oh, yeah, I didn't know you then, Peter. It could have been you. The person sat down, and I thought, basically, what an idiot. Even worse, what an idiot. And as soon as I thought that, I looked over the Giza Plateau, and there was Jesus. And he thought back what I had just thought, and his next thought was, more than anything, you need to work on your thoughts. And I woke up blown away. I had written down, what do I need to work on spiritually? And from the big guy himself, I got, work on your thoughts. And from that day on, I really became a really involved in, this is going to tie into reincarnation, don't worry. I really became involved with dream work. And I realized I was pretty good at it. And the way I did it was, I basically thought right away, well, the quickest way to do this is to summarize a dream in one statement, what's happening to whom, and just interpret that. And this went on, people in the study group would tell me their dreams. When I eventually moved here, people would tell me their dreams. Eventually, a woman who was a consultant for Fortune 10 executives would get dreams from executives, and she would call me, and she'd pay me $30 an hour to interpret dreams, laying on my couch at home at night, you know, a couple hours, a couple times a week. And it was a great part-time job. And she kept saying, you need to write this down, you need to write this down. And eventually I wrote a book called The Encyclopedia of Symbolism, which became Dream Images and Symbols.
Yes, that's a bestseller, isn't it?
Yeah, AR is one of Barry's best-selling books, yeah. But what happened is, shortly thereafter, I wrote a book called The Persian Legacy and the Edgar Cayce Material, which is about...
I read it.
Yeah, it's about Edgar Cayce's past life as a desert nomad who founded this city in Persia.
Yolt.
And he had this desert city was like a healing center. And while writing that, I had this, I don't know how to describe it other than a waking awareness dream experience. I was sitting in this desert city, and I was sitting on the sand, and I was sitting next to Elsie Sechrist, who for years was one of Aries' dream professionals. Ah. And she and I were sitting there. We had our own little section in this town community, and people would come up to us and tell us their dreams, and we would interpret them, and then they would pay us. And in the image, I saw getting paid. And I had this, oh my gosh, you know, I've been interpreting thousands of dreams, and no one really ever gives me a nickel. This used to be a real job. So I really think I was a past life dream. I think I was a dream interpreter in a past life.
Oh, I see. I'm imagining, who is it, Snoopy? Who has that? Or is it psychological help?
Isn't it Lucy?
Lucy, so that's what you used to do.
Yeah, I used to do dreams, yeah.
Well, gosh, I must owe you a lot of money because you've interpreted lots of my dreams.
You used to send more than one a week, as I recall, yeah.
They've been very, very, very helpful.
Thank you.
Yeah, so you've got this, what about, what's your connection, do you feel like, with the soul group of Edgar Cayce?
Well,
like,
I think, you know, obviously Persia would have been
Persia,
the time.
Yeah, Persia, yeah.
I had a real... not so much perhaps as John Van Auken, but I had a real connection with Egypt. And then, not through my own activity or anything, but I had the opportunity to go to Egypt 6 times, and mm-hmm. I became really close with Ahmed Fayed, who was like a brother to me.
Yeah.
He used to be our main contact in Egypt. And so definitely, there was a connection there.
Yeah.
And in fact, Ahmed, and then Shigeru Mitsuda, who is our president of Edgar Cayce Center in Japan. I got the feeling, honestly, that the three of us were all brothers, that we had mm-hmm. been together as a threesome. And it was just a great, great times, great experiences being together with both
of
them.
Yes, I remember when you used to have Shigeru on your answering machine. Yeah. that was very charming. Must have been a past life
friend. Yeah, Shigeru was a great friend, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the Japanese connection and the documentary that came out.
We had a beautiful documentary here the other night done by, with help from the Edgar Cayce Center in Japan. We had maybe 250 people here.
Yes.
It had English interviews as well as Japanese with English subtitles.
Yes, very good.
I thought it was great. Great documentary.
It's a nice model going forward for us.
Yeah. Well, there's so many things this work has to offer. You know, sometimes I go to meetings with other nonprofit folks here in the Taiwan area, and lots of times they'll ask me, you know, what are some of the major topics that Cayce talked about? And, you know, I come up with this menu because basically Cayce mentioned, including all the health aspects, about 10,000 different topics.
Yes.
And so I usually say, you know, that essentially the Cayce material is about the fact we create our own lives, mm-hmm. that we have a real strong hand in creating the life we lead. That the Cayce information is really about how we can develop and cultivate a personal relationship with the divine, regardless of how we want to define that. Cayce information suggests that all of our life experiences are really for consciousness growth, mm-hmm. that everything happens to us for a reason, mm-hmm. and that reason is to become better people.
Yes.
And that our own personal relationships are really that laboratory of how we can become a better person. Mm-hmm. Because as you and I have talked about before, we see our own strengths and weaknesses in other people.
Yes.
And, I think one of the things that I often turn to is the fact that we're wired for guidance. That, you know, when we have challenges or problems or frustrations, for me, I like to ask a question in a dream even now.
Yeah.
But whether it's, Cayce suggested, you know, you can meditate and think of a question and you can get an answer to that.
Yeah, I like to think that we have a GPS system.
Yeah, we have
a God positioning system, and you know, some folks choose not to use it, and it's really a tool. You know, like Hugh Lin used to say, we have one choice every day, and it's whether we're going to meditate or not. And I think that's the, are you going to access your internal GPS?
Yeah, because I mean, essentially, as you and I both know, we're spiritual beings having a physical experience, and sometimes our physical challenges, our physical desires, our physical worries get in the way of the spiritual being we're actually trying to be manifested here in the earth.
Yeah, it's almost like there's it's like an hourglass, and you know, all the sand can be in the physical, you know, and it's like then you're kind of out of balance, and it's always trying to get the hourglass at least balanced so that there's enough time and attention paid to your spiritual life.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so what are you working on now? What aspect of the Cayce work is kind of new to you? Are you exploring? Or?
Well, a couple of things. One, I've been working on this app that is going to come out from Ocean House Media, which is just an incredible app company. And basically, it's an Edgar Cayce thought for the day. And it'll be
that's great.
It'll be like a 6 or 7 minute thought that people can listen to every day. And it's
going to be audio?
It'll be audio on your phone. And it will be like, not my voice, thankfully. It'll be, I think it's a very pleasant, at this point, I think it's going to be a very pleasant sounding woman, a female voice. And it will just kind of set the tone for the day with thoughts and ideas from the Cayce material about, you know, what to keep in mind,
that's a great idea.
Remember to be of service, how to realize when God's with you, who can be against you. I mean, it's very upbeat, very positive. And I think it will really help. It's like an affirmation, mm-hmm. but it's audio, and it'll be on your phone. So that's one thing.
Great.
It'll probably be out before year end.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing I've been working on is I've been collecting, when I go around lecturing, I've been collecting stories from people about their personal angelic experiences.
Ah.
And so eventually I'm going to compile just a book on people's experiences with angels.
Oh. And how about you? Have you had experiences with angels?
I've had experiences with ghosts. Who were angelic. I mean, somehow after they died, they became more even spiritual than I knew them in the waking world. I'll tell you one.
Okay.
So there was this woman named Angela Marsh Peterson who had this, anything that could have happened to a woman in the 20th century happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
She was sexually abused. She lost a child to death. She was mm-hmm. in the military. She was divorced. She owned her own company. She started a doll museum. She was a dean of a dorm for boys. I mean, everything, you name it. And the Angela Marsh Peterson Doll Museum in High Point, North Carolina was started by her. Anyway, we connected through ARE. She wanted me to help her write her life story. Fascinating story. And it's really the story of all of us, how we grow up with all these hopes and ideals and expectations. We have life challenges. We regroup. We start over. And eventually, at the end of our life, we kind of rethink our life. And her story was just me living through her story with her was an incredible experience. Mm-hmm. It took us 4.5 years to write the book. Eventually, mm-hmm. it was published. But unfortunately, Angela didn't get to see it published. She died about 3 months before it was out. Mm-hmm. And she got to read all but the last 30 pages.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the story of Angela. I was with a friend of mine at the Sloan Kettering Hospital in New York. He was dying of liver cancer, and I had taken he and his wife up there. And I was in a bed. We were in a hotel room. They were in one bed. I was in the other bed. And all at once, I woke up in the room, and I'm laying there in bed. And as I'm laying there, I see this sparkling light, kind of like just sparkles, come through the door into this hotel room. And it was Angela. And she was a luminous being, but it was her, and she had been in a wheelchair the whole time I knew her, but she was walking.
Yeah.
And she walked over to the bed, and she looked down at me, and she said, "Thank you for finishing the book, honey." And she leaned down, and she kissed me right above the lip, and it was like being electrocuted. I shot up in bed like this because it was so much energy. And then she was gone. But I have no doubt that she was in that room, no doubt at all.
Wow. Oh, good. So you're going to work on a book.
Well, I'm going to work on a book on people's experiences with angelic beings. I don't think that experience rises to the level of life transformation.
Of what other people have experienced. Yeah,
absolutely not. But it was just a personal experience that assured me that she was still around, number one. And number two, she was aware that the book had come out and it had been finished. So,
nice. So another subject that I'm interested in, I think our viewers are, is you, I don't know how well known it is that you have a deep interest in the Noah story. I know you've written a book about it, and for a little while, I remember you had like, I don't know, 300 little Noah.
I had
Noah.
300 Noah's Arks, yeah.
I knew any time I went on vacation, I got to give, you know, you're probably like tired of getting Noah things. But what resonates with you, and what's the background for you about that story? What do you think that story, how is it relevant now or as an allegory?
Well, and just so you know, when my wife and I moved a couple of years ago, I got rid of about 200 arcs, took them to the Goodwill.
So you're down to like 12,000
or something. I'm down to about 100, but I don't think the Goodwill had ever seen so many arcs. You know, what are we going to do with all these arcs, you know? But I saved my favorites.
You kept the one I gave you, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah, absolutely. The impetus started because, like you, I grew up Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that, as you know, is really recommended by the Edgar Cayce readings is to read the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So I started reading the Bible. And reading the Bible, I came across, and it's in Genesis, basically 4 through 8 is where the Noah story is, I came across something that had was right there, at least as far as I could see, that nobody had ever told me. My parents hadn't told me, no one had told me in church, no one had told me in Sunday school, I had never seen it in print anywhere, and it was this. Methuselah was Noah's grandfather. The oldest man in the Bible was Noah's grandfather. Mm-hmm. And if you calculated their when they were born and when they died and how long they lived, mm-hmm. Methuselah died the year of the flood. And that just fascinated me. Okay, he died the year of the flood. Why? I mean, he was the oldest man in the Bible. Why did he die that year? So I started doing some research, and I started researching rabbinical sources, and I started researching other psychics like Rudolf Steiner, and mm-hmm. I started researching the Edgar Cayce material. And the thing that surprised me is that there was lots of information about the story. I started researching what evangelicals said about the story. Mm-hmm. There's a great book called The Ark on Ararat. And there was lots of information about the story that each group did not seem to be aware of. Mm-hmm. Like the people who were psychologists, or the people who were Steiner people, or the people who were Cayce, didn't know about what the evangelicals said, and or rabbinical mm-hmm. people said. Mm-hmm. So I started compiling all this into what eventually became my master's thesis mm-hmm. on the Ark myth. Mm-hmm. And the story is really about the Ark, even though Cayce would say it was a real story, it really happened. He would also say, which is different than what evangelicals would say, that Noah and his family were not the only ones saved. The people all over the world got this calling somehow that something's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And that's why there is an ark tradition on every single planet. Mm-hmm. I mean, every single continent. Every single planet. Every single continent.
Every planet that every has water.
So eventually I wrote this story about the ark tradition. Eventually I wrote a book called The Rest of the Noah Story. And that's kind of the background. And then people started sending me arks, even like yours that I didn't really want. No, I just get But people started sending me arcs.
Well, do you think it's like
an archetype for personal transformation and change?
An archetype.
It's an archetype.
For personal change.
It's about, because what happens is that, even though it's a true story, basically the story is about how people are inundated over events of which they have no control, mm-hmm. and they gather everything a part of their world for comfort and safety. They go through a journey, they rise out on higher ground, and then everything that was part of their old world is a part of the new. The animals get off the boat, but they're on a higher level of awareness.
So they have to choose, they have to make a...
It's basically about going through transformation and change and rising at a higher level.
Yeah, leaving some things behind and moving...
Yeah, and moving forward. Oh. That's what it's about.
Oh, that's a great...
So now, so many people, I think, feel in the midst of transformation and change, that archetype has resurfaced. And so you can see little Noah's Ark magnets, you can see it in mm-hmm. kids' places. It's not because people are fascinated by this guy in the raincoat. It's because they feel in the midst of change, and so that archetype has resurfaced. Ah, that's what it's about.
I see. Well, we're going to wrap up soon, but there's a couple questions I still have left. I know I've been here the whole time, you know, since before you became CEO, and I saw right away that in a time of economic challenge, you really took the bull by the horns, and you redid the massage school. You know, I think that you used to be able to probably find an abacus over there, and now you got the Mondo boards, you've got state-of-the-art.
Great classrooms,
Oh my gosh, it's unbelievable. And then also with Atlantic University, the two buildings, one you refurbished, one that you built, have really brought us into the 21st century. But what do you see going forward?
I think that going forward that my hope is that the Cayce information, the Cayce concepts, will be available in a variety of ways probably we can't even imagine.
Yeah.
It will be available in a variety of languages. It will be instant access. So it used to be you had to come here to Virginia Beach to look up a reading. Mm-hmm. Now my hope is eventually you can be anywhere in the world. You can say, I need help with whatever, and that you'll be able to find in a way that can resonate to you, maybe not the same older language of the readings, but in maybe a more modern form. You'll be able to find exactly what you need, exactly when you need it, to transform yourself physically, mentally, and spiritually. That's my hope.
Okay. And then, there's since as long as I've been here, it seems like the jump to get us to the masses has been connected with a movie. That Edgar Cayce film would somehow be a breakthrough. Do you see that as part of the vision, or do you think that really the breakthrough is going to happen in different ways?
I think we can't, obviously, we can't orchestrate a movie on our own.
Right.
A movie would be great to help bring the awareness of Cayce to the masses. Mm-hmm. But what we need to be able to do is, at this end, we need to have the information materials available for when something like that happens.
Yeah.
Personally,
build it and they'll come.
Build it and they'll come. I feel like we're on the verge of something major in terms of the awareness of this work, and that's why we need to make the site available. Yes. We need to make the online material available. That's why we need to be ready when they come.
Well, you certainly have done that. You certainly have you know, and again, in economic challenges, I'm sure the board fought you on it, but you've really moved forward to make this campus ready. You know, it was kind of dilapidated. I mean, it was wonderful, but now, you know, there's just some finishing touches that we're working on, but it really is, it wouldn't be, what would be the right way to say it? But if it was to reach that level, it's like we're at a level where perhaps the facilities can match the demand.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was, when I got here on staff back in 1982, I mean, sometimes the carpet, I mean, our repair would be we put a big piece of tape on it to hold down the frayed carpet. I mean, so we definitely needed some upkeep.
I'm sure we could all tell stories about, you know, what
and,
the
and
old buildings are
like. I'm just so
like.
Grateful for the members and board members who contributed to the project. They gave their heart, their souls, their time, treasure, talent. And it's really that. I mean, I had the idea, but it was really all of them that made it possible.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad to hear that you had the support that you needed. Now, before we close, is there anything that you want to touch on or want to bring forward that I haven't asked you?
No, I just, again, would restate that regardless of how, where you are, what's going on in your life, the questions you have, there are insights and information in the readings that I think can truly be helpful to you. And that Casey was really all about helping people transform their lives. And I think we continue to do that today in a variety of ways. Our mission, after all, is that we create opportunities for profound personal change. And we do that in study groups, we do that in our educational programs, we do that in conferences, in books, in interviews like this. Mm-hmm. So I'm just so grateful to be a part of this, and I'm grateful you're a part of this.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, I just want to thank you personally and on behalf of the organization, just on your commitment to this work. And I don't know what the behind the scenes is like, but you're always cheerful, you're always funny, and so you exemplify that. And so I just want to thank you for what you've done, what you've given, your commitment to this, and kind of what you've provided for all of us. I'm able to collect a paycheck because of the good work that you're doing out there.
So thank you so much, Peter.
Yeah, thank you very much.